Craft.
This is Daft About Craft, the craft beer podcast, proudly brought to you in association with independent bottle shop Real Ale. You can buy online at realale.com and in-store at Twickenham, Notting Hill and Maida Vale. Follow them on Instagram at realale_ltd.
Daft About Craft.
Well, it's hard to believe, but here we are again with episode number 10 of Daft About Craft, the craft beer podcast, with me, Dave D.
And me, Dave B.
Very warm welcome to what is an absolutely packed podcast. I sort of find myself saying this every month, but it does seem to keep getting busier and busier on the pod. And we've got loads going on this month, haven't we? I say this month, this episode, because we're every 3 weeks
now. Yeah,
we've
got two this month. And as you say, it's not getting any lighter in content, which hopefully is a good thing. We find there's no end of beers to talk about and people to talk to about them as well. There's more and more interest. Feels like we're sort of getting a few more people are sort of coming forward and saying, oh, would you like to talk to us? And we always like to talk to people about beer. So if you're listening to this and thinking that you might like to talk to us, be it a brewery or someone within beer, or if you want to just have a chat to us as a listener and share your thoughts, always please do.
Get in touch. Instagram is the best way, I think, but you can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well. Just get in touch. We love having a chat to you. And somebody we did get in touch with a little while ago was the people at the Copper Beach Brewing Company. We're really, really, really excited to have them coming up on the podcast this time for a chat with us.
We had never talked to Dan and Sam before face-to-face, but we'd had plenty of Instagram conversations with them. They'd never done a podcast before because they've only been going a matter of months in terms of actually having some canning and getting it out there. It was one of the most enjoyable nights we've had in a while over the medium of Zoom as ever at the moment, although hopefully the times are changing in that respect. But it was so good and it went on for so long, but we just thought rather than give you a condensed version, it'd be much better to let you hear sort of their whole story, where they've come from, what they're doing, what their hopes are, and talk about their beers, which are really, really good as well.
So we're going to have them as part of the podcast for about 10 or 15 minutes and then give you a longer, more whole version, which we will release a few days after this episode. So something different, which we hope you'll really enjoy. What else have we got? We've got our drink along with us, where hopefully you've grabbed the beers we're featuring and you can drink them with us. Two beers, one from Verdant and one from Beatnik's Republic in Manchester.
Yep, we've gone to the dark side this month with Real Ale, so hopefully you'll enjoy your stouts, because that's what we've gone for.
Yep, they're looking really good, specifically the Beatnik's, over 11% that one. I'm looking forward to trying that, see how that pans out. Yes, that was me who chose that one. What else have we got? We've got the good folk at Dig Brew coming along for a chat as well. And we've got Hype or Tripe.
That's one of the fans of Alan Partridge as well. So if you know that at the top of the show, you'll know which beer is coming.
Exactly. So plenty coming. And we're going to kick it off straight away with Brew to Me. If you haven't heard this part of the podcast before, it's basically where we pick a beer from a brewery we haven't tried before. There's about 2,500 brewers in this country, I believe, so there's plenty to choose from. I'm heading down the M5 to Bristol, to the new Bristol Brewery. I'm not sure how long they've been going, actually. I did try to find out, but I couldn't find that out anywhere on the internet. Must be lurking in some corner somewhere. But I did find out a bit of information about them, and it's a husband and wife team, Noel and Maria. And they're located in the centre of Bristol. They've got a whole load of beers on their website, and they have new releases quite often. The one I've got here is the Chocolate Banana Milk Stout, which horrified Dave B when I told him. The look of disgust on his face was his picture.
It's not because I don't enjoy the concept of it. I just think it's a really risky style to try and pull off. There does seem to be a bit of a movement for banoffee at the moment. I know there's plenty of breweries sort of have been doing banana flavored stouts.
You see, we had a bit of a bad experience, didn't we, with the
banana clipper from Neon Raptor, which was just far too sweet for my palate. It was very sugary, and that's probably sort of tarnished me against them a little bit at the moment. I'm just not seeking them out.
I guess that didn't purport to be a milk stout, did it?
No, that was down as just a normal stout. So, and it wasn't an imperial, it was in between. But this isn't weak though, is it? Even though yours is a milk stout, it's quite a strong milk stout.
Well, I mean, milk stouts are traditionally between about 4% and 6%, I think, and this actually weighs in at 7%, so it's a little bit heavier on the ABV than you might expect. Now, I've got to say, cracked open the can, and there's this amazing banana aroma jumping out at me. This isn't your sort of banana from the fruit bowl. This is your banana foam sweets, this is.
Right, okay. See, that would put me off a bit if it's the artificial sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, but I suppose it's kind of what it's got to be.
Obviously expected this to be sweet, so I can't complain if it is, which is the thing I often do complain about these beers, that they are overly sweet.
Nice head on it.
It is. It's a lovely sort of copper-coloured head, isn't it? Yeah, milk stouts date back to the early 1800s. I was doing a little bit of research earlier.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, though, that 220 years ago, they didn't taste like this.
They didn't put banana in them,
No. The actual taste of the banana is a lot less than the smell. There's much more on the nose.
So is it more, because we're in a milk stout, my guess was what I was hoping it might be like, which would make it palatable to me, is it a bit like banana Nesquik in terms of there's that sort of milky banana bit and then there's a bit of maybe chocolate or something on the back of it?
Absolutely. It even says on the can, actually, I noticed this earlier, taste chocolate banana milk.
Okay, well, that I could get on board with. And if that's what it is, and how sort of milky is it? Is it thin or is it quite...
No, it's got quite a lot of body to that. Again, more than I imagined it would have. That's pretty good.
You look very happy with yourself, so that's good.
Yeah, I like that.
They've done a cinder toffee stout, haven't they? Which that's caught my eye. I haven't had New Bristol either, but I've seen that, and then they did a souped up version, I think, as well.
Well, I saw the cinder toffee and I thought, oh dear, that could be that again, that could be too sweet. But this is incredibly well balanced. If it's similar to this, I would certainly get a hold of one. That's excellent. I read some reviews online earlier. A lot of people were raving about this. It's got an average Untappd of nearly 4, which is pretty good from several hundred check-ins. You know, they've got a lot of beers on their website, and all of them are between £3 and £4, except the Cinder Toffee one, which I think was £5.60.
Which even then, for the strength it is, because I think it's about 10, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. That's incredible value.
Very reasonable.
New Bristol say on their website, we brew all our beers in small batches, one beer at a time, and it's our goal to keep your taste buds intrigued by constantly producing different flavours. To make the same beers all the time to us would be boring, and we're constantly experimenting with different hops. And well, if this is the sort of experimenting they do, I'm very happy with it. There's a lovely sort of rich chocolatiness to it, just topped off with a bit of those foam bananas.
Well, that's a pretty ringing endorsement then, I'd say.
A nice slice of chocolate cake is needed now, I think. Wow, well, I'm very impressed. Do you want to crack open yours while I keep going with this?
Sure. Well, funnily enough, without talking to each other in terms of what we were going to have, we've both gone fruity. I'm slightly different. I've got a raspberry wheat, and I've got a raspberry wheat from Wild Sky, who, like New Bristol, purporting to their website, they're very keen to make different true classics and uniquely crafted beers, and they do small batch as well. Now, they popped up on our Instagram. I'd never heard of them before, got in touch with them. It's Paul and Chris. We've spoken to Chris on Instagram. Very nice guy. And they're based quite near me as well, actually. They're in Linton in Cambridgeshire. So not a million miles away. So it's good to find someone local. And this is one of a few beers that they've got at the moment. You can get this in a pack, I know, for £12. It's three of their new ones. It's this, a Bohemian Lager, and a Dipper. But as I say, I've gone for the raspberry wheat purely because it sounded the most intriguing. That is a nice blushing raspberry blush, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Quite light, but it's not sort of deep raspberry pink or anything, but it's a blush, I'd say. No real head, a little bit of foam, but not a lot.
How does it smell?
Does smell of raspberries. It's quite, I wouldn't say it's subtle, actually. It's raspberry itself as a smell is quite subtle, isn't it? Everyone can sort of picture, you get in your mind how a raspberry smells. And this isn't like when they're super, super sweet. It's not a synthetic raspberry smell. It smells very authentic.
Right. It's usually the case on this feature that one of us loves the beer we drink it and the other one isn't so keen. But could this be a first? Are we both really going to enjoy what we've got here?
So This is supposed to be a tart, hazy, wheat pale, subtly spiced with coriander, orange peel, and loaded with juicy raspberry fruitness, or fruitiness, should I say. It is a little bit tart. The taste wasn't quite what I thought it would be. I thought, given the nose, it was going to be a bit more like a fruit beer. It's not. The wheat is there, and it actually makes it quite dry to start with. I don't get much coriander, and I don't get the orange peel. The raspberries do stay there. I would say if you were having this when it warms up a bit more, it'd go down very easily. It's
What was the ABV, did you say?
It's a little bit more than I thought it would be, actually. It's 5.5, which it doesn't taste like at all. I'm just getting a little bit of orange now, actually, as well. It's a fruit, hazy, wheat, pale. I can't argue with that. It's very drinkable. I would almost expect to find it on a cask somewhere. You sort of see traditional brewers do orange wheats and things like that, and they're very dry. They're very sort of straw-like, and I never find the fruit comes through that much. This is similar, but the fruit is there more. So it sort of straddles both for me. There's the craft element to it, but it wouldn't shock me to go to a beer festival in the coming months, hopefully, and a traditional brewer or even a craft brewer doing some cask would have a beer like this.
So it sounds like that's a pretty good introduction to Wild Sky, then.
It doesn't put me off at all trying what else I've got. I like lagers. I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. But I thought I'd try something that would have a bit of a stronger flavour profile to sort of go for it. And a dipper, there's so many about. I thought that was a bit unfair to go in with something like that. So I thought I'd see what they're doing as something a little bit different. And I like it. Yeah, I'd have it again. I'd certainly have it, as I say, when the weather warms up, I think it'd be a little bit better again because of it just works nicely as a palate cleanser. Mm. So, yeah, no complaints for me. Nice beer.
Sounds like, you know, on a day off from work when the sun's shining and you're in the garden,
it'd be sort of the first or the second one you'd have, definitely.
Yeah, one to get the ball rolling on an afternoon, evening in the garden. Fantastic. Well, that sounds encouraging. I've got a can of it as well, and you certainly haven't put me off from opening it.
No, it's a nice beer, very nice beer.
And meanwhile, this chocolate banana milk stout from New Bristol going down very, very well.
It must be for you, because out of the pair of us, I usually leave the station a lot quicker. Well, that's not to say you don't keep going, but if you're going through a beer at pace, it means you're really enjoying it.
Yeah, so. I should maybe say that I haven't actually had a beer for about 4 days, so I've really been looking forward to this one.
So you've been gagging for one, so it's going to go down whatever it was.
But that shouldn't detract from what a great beer this is, because it really is. I can see myself getting onto their web shop pretty smartish. And ordering some more beers from them.
Good. So there we go. New Bristol and Wild Sky both come through with flying colours, which is, as Dave says, quite unusual for this segment. We usually operate at a 50% strike rate. So to get two beers we really like is really good.
Right, so you're listening to Daft About Craft, and we're absolutely delighted to have a brand new brewery featuring on episode number 10, Copper Beach from Stourport in Worcestershire, and we're joined by the brains behind the operation, Sam and Dan. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
This must be your first, I say interview, it's not really an interview, but first chat with anybody then, because you're brand new to the scene.
Yeah, other than a little piece in the local paper.
I did see that, actually, yeah.
Yeah, but other than that, yes, you are the first.
So do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, but a bit of your history and what made you start a brewery in really strange times?
I'm very vocal about it now, but not before, but I've suffered with mental health issues in my time. And there was a period, I've worked in high pressure jobs for a long period of time, senior management, operations management. And with that comes the pressure, and my work-life balance wasn't great. And went for a period, you know, it was pretty tough. And so therefore I needed a hobby, which is one of the main reasons. Equally, it's been born out of being pressurized into drinking real ale, which I can thank John, one of the co-owners, for. I was very much a cider drinker. So pink cider, mango cider, all of that, craft cider. Never a big fan of beer until going to football with John, so the Kiddie Harriers, which are literally next door to where we live. So got into sort of beer that way, started to enjoy that aspect of it, tasting new styles, obviously starting off with the likes of HPA, Worcestershire Way, you know, classic beers, local classic beers. And then moving into stuff, Club Tropicana from Tiny Rebel, Jaipur, and just getting a real feel for the fact that, you know, I like this. I like the taste of beer. I like the taste of these beers specifically. And I think the thing that happened was just after Christmas, wasn't it? We went on the Seven Valley Railway for a bit of a pub crawl, and we ended up in a little micro pub which is just down the road from us called The Weavers. And on the wall, I don't know if you've ever been there, but on the wall there's a diagram on a chalkboard of the brewing process. And very drunkenly, I was sort of like, I want to learn what that is. And I think the next day I went on Amazon, found a book called How to Brew by Greg Hughes, read it within probably 2 or 3 days, was enthralled with it, jumped onto a website, found a short course by an American chap called Bob Sylvester, who runs a brewery. He's quite well known in America for sort of sour beers and things like that. And enrolled in a course, which is just like an online course, and probably did that in a week as well.
The thing you have to understand about Dan's personality is he's very all in or not at all. It's like once he gets going with something, it's not half a toe, it's like the whole hog. Yeah. He goes all
the way. I think that's a personality which really suits craft beer, though, because once you start meeting people, we're all pretty much the same. It's once you get in, you don't get out, you just get further and further in, and you're just more and more interested in it. It's like, well, how does that work? Why does that do that? I want to know about that. I want to try that. And it's
true.
My 2 years of learning the brewing process are probably the equivalent of most people's things. I probably go to bed every night and I'm reading a book about beer. I'm either listening to a podcast. But just, you know, when we were in lockdown and we were walking everywhere, just listening to a podcast, so just really in depth with it. I'm never satisfied with what I'm doing in the process. So I'm always looking to improve it, which is another thing. So
that's another element of Dan's personality.
This all sounds very familiar.
Even to the point, these control cans that we've introduced into our process, you know, last month it was like, we need to sell every can because we don't want to keep them back. We want them to get out. And this month it's like, we'll take one from each keg for each batch, just because I want to make sure that I'm not sending out bad beer. You know, I've obsessed about the whole process, whether it be the water chemistry to yeast to using the right hops.
Table has got a stack of books that's like maybe 7 books high, and it's literally yeast, water,
malts.
Yeah, there's like he's got a massive book on each element.
Yeah. So from that trip when you went into the pub and you saw the diagram on the wall to now, how long was that? How long is that?
It was 2018.
Yeah, 2018.
January 2018.
You know, we went to Bruges, went to De Hoffman Brewery, which is...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the tour there is really good, isn't it? And the bit at the end, you just want to spend all day in that bar bit at the end. Yeah.
I don't know if you can say tour guide as us, but he was amazing.
Yeah.
They love it, don't they? They want to tell you all about it. And
I mean, that was when we first met each other, you know, that was 12 years ago. Yeah. So, you know, we were into... without realising how into that process. So seeing that process on the wall, and literally, I think I escalated, and it's probably going to be a bit of an eye-opener for Sam, but I probably escalated from spending £150 on my first kit to nearly a grand on buying a decent free... And the other thing is, a lot of people homebrewing do one-pot systems. I couldn't do that. I had to go for the traditional room.
We had to take over our entire kitchen and have things on different levels, and... It was insane. That's basically how it's got to this point, because he ended up expanding the home brewing so much and just it was taking over the house. So I was like, if this is serious, you've got to get this out of the house because it's just taking over.
So do you brew in the shed now that I've seen pictures of? Looks fantastic, the shed does.
Yeah, it's
tight.
It's 12x9, and we do a lot with that space. Yeah. We've got a lot in there, and it's probably going to outgrow itself, and we're going to have to think seriously about what we do next. But in terms of building that was fun as well. In terms of, you know, John's the engineer. He's done everything from building control boxes for us to heating systems, cooling systems. A lot, you know, he's come out of the RAF and has got a lot of technical ability there. You know, we've got Sam says we've got to stay in our lane. So we've got Sam does everything marketing, social media. If I even say anything, it probably would come back about 2 weeks later as a good idea because she's rethought it. But nine times out of ten, it's no, leave it to me. John is all over the engineering, electrics, stuff like that.
And just general, like, building.
Yeah, yeah. And when I've got a problem, it's sounding it out with him, and he can come up with something, conceptualise something that will work. I'm brewing, and I need to be left alone to brew as well. That's the other thing. I'm a pretty, you know...
You had an assistant, and the assistant, you wanted to show him something, you'd just do it for him, wouldn't you, by the end of it?
Yeah, at the moment, yeah.
It all sounds so familiar.
That brew kit and I have had have built a relationship over many frustrating times. And the amount of times I flooded the place, it's...
unbelievable. The worst thing we did with that shed is not putting a drain in the floor, because he honestly manages to flood it every single time.
Yeah, and I blame everybody else for it, not myself. But yeah, so yeah, it's been an absolute labour of love in terms of building it. And as Sam said, it grew to a point where we couldn't have it in the house anymore. So the hobby needed to go somewhere else, so we built a shed. But the hobby became a thing, well, actually, can we turn this into a business? Is this something I want to pursue short, medium, long term? The goal is to just make good beer. The goal is to do it right and do, you know, the big thing for me, and this comes from just my own sort of morals and ethics, is that everything I do has to be done with a thought behind it. You know, it's like the journeys that we take to deliver to people, the environmental impact on that, and why we've done the delivery with a difference, because it's we want to make sure that we're giving back to our community, because, and giving our customers the opportunity to give back, because we live in a very busy world and we're all trapped in our homes, and people may want to give or don't have time to give, and this just gives them that opportunity as well.
The delivery with a difference, do you want to talk a bit more about that and tell people how it works? Because this is the first time I've heard of a craft brewer doing what you're doing, which is fantastic. You must be trendsetters in this, because I've not heard it before.
I hope it does become a trend. You know, if it encourages more people to do something similar, that would be amazing. I mean, it was all Dan's idea, because you've just heard how important it is for him to give back. So yeah, we don't charge a delivery fee. At the moment, we've only got the ability to deliver locally because we're doing it all ourselves. So we just ask people to donate food from a list that we take from the food bank's website in place of the delivery fee. So if they don't want to do it, that's absolutely fine. The list is there because I think a lot of people tend to give very similar things like beans and pasta, and it's not necessarily what the food bank actually needs. So we thought it was important to communicate with people these are the current requested items. So they get an email after they've placed an order, and there's a prompt in the email to say we're not charging delivery. And we were absolutely blown away with that first round of deliveries that we did. Not everybody gave, which is absolutely fine. The people who did give gave so generously. I was so naive. I thought I'll just have this little bag of stuff to drop off and I can probably take it to the supermarket and put it in the donations box. But no, it was like filled our kitchen side. And I had to physically take it all to the centre because people had been so generous.
That's phenomenal. Like you say, I really hope a lot of other local breweries or even the bigger boys and girls want to get in on that, because I can't really see a downside to it.
Over that period of time, that week, from the moment we opened the web shop to the day that Sam went out to I was brewing, and that the Sam and John had gone out and deliver. When they came back with everything they came back with, I didn't care what was getting said on tap. I didn't care what was in the bank account. I didn't care that we'd sold out. I just looked at it and I was like, that's not more important. I mean, I guess it is, because obviously I've got an income from another job and this is not paying my wages. But it was just, we've achieved that just by offering to do something for free. And I think that it was never a marketing exercise, but it was never a marketing initiative.
And we told my dad, and my dad went, that's a great marketing ploy. And we were like, it's not a marketing ploy, Dad. We actually really want to... That makes my dad sound awful. But, you know, it's sometimes where people's heads go, but actually. Then we were like, oh, God, do you think people think we're doing it? And then when we came back with that stuff, none of that mattered. It just didn't matter because it worked so incredibly well. And I hope it does continue to work well. And like you say, if other people jump on board and start doing it as well,
which is great.
You know, more the better.
Obviously, that's not the byproduct, but it is part of the experience of having a Copper Beach beer.
Yeah.
Can we have a Copper Beach beer now, please? Yeah. I've been looking at it for ages. I really wanted to get stuck in. So
Sorry.
So we've got three beers with you guys, and these were the ones that came out on launch day. And there is a fourth beer that you've added since, which we'll get to in a bit. But we're starting with Birdie. And before we came on, you were telling us that all the beers so far, and I presume all that are coming, have a quite important story to them and a meaningful story to you guys. So what's the story behind Birdie?
Birdie, I mean, I live next to Kidderminster Harriers Football Stadium for a start, and obviously Harrier is a bird, which is one element of it. John is also a keen golfer, and Birdie is a golfing term. But the biggest thing behind it is it's just a reminder of going to the football with John. You know, it's probably where John and I built our relationship as son-in-law, father-in-law. It was that, the element. So it's a bit of a sort of nod to say, you know, about the relationship that I have with Sam's dad. But equally, it's about being forced to drink craft beer. And I mean, made to feel bad because they drank cider or San Miguel. Yeah.
So Birdie is a 4.6, I want to say. Yeah. Yep, 4.6 pale ale. What have we got in here? This is one of the things we're always interested in. So what? It's very hazy, really nice and hazy. But what was sort of the process behind this one then?
So this one is a nod to John as well. John loves Simcoe. So John's favourite hop is Simcoe. So it was about making a beer that was a bit sessionable, because some of the beers that we'd made previously in the test batches were north of 6%.
Nothing wrong with that.
So it's a little bit sessionable, but north of 4%, and making sure that it had a good balance between that. You can get a bit of a malt backbone to it as well. The real point behind it is to showcase Simcoe as a leading hop. A lot of people, obviously, and I have done it myself with the iteration of NYC that's coming out this month, a lot of people use Simcoe alongside other hops such as Citra and Mosaic, and obviously it has its impact in lots of different, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about brewing. You can brew any beer differently with a different hop and you get a different reaction or a different yeast and different malt. And this is Sam's favourite beer. It's becoming my favourite beer. I absolutely think it's probably the best beer I've brewed. NYC was that beer, and I think I've refined it again. But yeah, that's pretty much the story behind it. I mean, the yeast we use is Verdant. So obviously that became a big thing for August last year in homebrewing circles, where Verdant yeast became accessible in the market. And obviously I tried a batch of it and I was like, okay, this is good. This adds another dimension to my brewing, because there's all the stories that if you read any book about brewing, the story is that a brewer can get the beer to the fermenter, but it's the yeast that turns it into beer. So another critical part of looking at that is the yeast strains that I use, which adds that.
Do you find yourself now, when you drink somebody else's beer, comparing them to your own beers? You must do, surely.
You can't not, but it's...
Yeah, I would say they're better than mine.
they're not really comparable for lots of reasons, are they? But you do find yourself going, do I enjoy this more than what we produce? And if so, why? Because that's the important thing.
Well, you've been a bit of a journey with my beers, haven't you? Because there's a point where Sam would go, oh, there's something not quite right. It's a bit like what I used to do with her cooking, actually, to be fair.
Let's not go there.
It's good to have people like that around, because, you know, that obsession of trying to perfect things, like, I was like, okay, I'm gonna...
It's really hard to explain, but they just didn't taste professional. There was still a taste where it just didn't taste refined enough to be a professional brew. And it had this turning point suddenly. And I was like, you could have given me that and said it was from anywhere, and I would have, you know, that tastes professional. And that's when it started to turn.
Well, I'm enjoying this, definitely. Absolutely. How about you, Dave?
Yeah, very much. I like Simcoe.
It's 4.6 and it doesn't end up tasting like water on the back end the further you go. It stays bitter. And I think that's such a... I don't know, because I wouldn't have the brew in now, but I'm guessing there must be an accomplishment within that, because so many session pails fade away to nothing and I'm out after about half the can because I'm bored.
Well, I really appreciate that, because that came from a criticism from John, where one of my beers was too thin. So I went on the way and looked at what that was all about. And it is part of the process in terms of the mash temperatures that we use, and obviously the grains that we use to our body at the same time, and sweetness as well. So, yeah, and I really appreciate that.
Daft About Craft.
Right, well, I hope you enjoyed that 15 minutes or so there of chat with Dan and Sam from the Copper Beach Brewing Company in Worcestershire. We've got loads more of that interview. So what we're going to do, we're going to release a standalone episode featuring just that audio and the rest of it. So probably an hour or so is worth in total. So if you keep watching on Spotify and wherever else, you should get the notification when that's available. And hopefully you'll download it and listen to some more, because they've got a great story and they've clearly got some very great beers as well.
Now, moving swiftly on, it's time for the second instalment of Drink Along With Us, which is in association with our good friends at Real Ale. And if you want to get any beers from them, especially these two we're about to talk about, then you need to get to realale.com. Last time we had three beers for the first go at this. Really enjoyed them, but they're all light. So we made a point of saying, right, we're going to go dark this time around, and we certainly have. So what have we drinking this time?
Right, we've got a couple of stouts in front of us. We've got one from Verdant, and we've got one from Beatniks Republic in Manchester. The interesting thing about the Verdant one is, when you say Verdant, you don't think of stouts, do you? You think of hazy pails and juice bombs, really, don't you? They're not famed for this at all.
I don't think I've ever had a stout. No, I think I'd remember if I'd had a stout from Verdant. I can't think of one. So I'm quite interested to see what their take on a stout is. And they've also picked a bit of a lesser variety as well, which is the export stout. I had to do a little bit of cramming on this, and I'm sure there's people who've got a bit better knowledge and are a bit more educated on it. So I apologise and feel free to correct any mistakes I may be about to make. But the export stout as a style comes about from, we're going back all the way to when beers were shipped around the world, like the IPA, India Pale Ale, and stouts were also shipped around to expats and those out in the colonies, but more hops, more alcohol, and natural preservatives, which make for able to preserve a beer for longer. So an export stout would be traditionally stronger than the stout that, say, you would get in England traditionally. So that's why this weighs in at 7.7. And there's sort of that Guinness Foreign Extra, which is a very popular one. You still get the sort of Kenyan and Nigerian versions, I believe. So we're in that sort of ballpark of that's an export stout, basically.
And this is called Albino Pheasant.
Yes, for reasons unknown to us. Verdant, they're a bit like Pomona Island, aren't they? And there's always a story behind the naming of a beer.
I think a lot of breweries have a lot of fun with their naming, don't they? But unless you're in on it sometimes, you haven't got a clue what it's all about.
That's all part of the creative license. But
Well, I poured mine like an absolute Muppet and I've got an enormous, enormous 3-inch head on it. I'm not quite sure how that happened. It looks like someone shook the canner before.
That's not the best.
I have to wait about 20 minutes for that to settle down.
I've got a much smaller head.
Oh, well, look who's the professional pourer out of us.
Quite mocker. I will say, I don't get an awful lot on the nose. It's quite a watery nose.
It's a very watery nose for me as well, yeah. I don't get a lot.
Yeah, there's no sense of hop, no sense of malt, cocoa, anything like that. It's just very watery.
The head, my huge head, is a very nice colour, however.
Okay, so the nose isn't up to much, but there is plenty of body within there.
It's not thick or anything, but it's there's certainly more.
It's quite full.
Yeah, full is the word, I think, because it's not. It doesn't taste watery like it smells. There's a lot of malt in there for me, sort of chocolate flavours.
I think I read somewhere there was an awful lot of malts, different malts used in this. So I want to say 11 different ones, or perhaps 13.
In fact, that really packs a big malt punch, doesn't it? It's very malty and very chocolatey, very dark chocolate.
Yes, yeah, definitely a bitter chocolate.
That's nice, actually. That's nice.
I think it's quite true to the style. I wouldn't profess to having had many export stouts, but this would sort of be what I would expect it to be, really. Sort of if you've ever had the Guinness ones compared to normal Guinness, it's not as creamy, it's a bit more roasty, a bit maltier, and yeah, a little bit stronger in strength, and this is 7.7. Wouldn't know it's 7.7, would you?
It hides that. I do like this feature because it also encourages us to drink things that we wouldn't necessarily drink. I would probably never have picked this one out in a million years.
No, agreed. I don't think I would have done. I'm glad I have. That's really interesting. And as we say with this feature, the idea is we want to hear what you think of it. So let us know. You can let us know on a voice note. You can message us on Instagram and we can share that or something, or however you want to do it. But we really want to find out what you're enjoying with these beers and what you want to see more of. You know, if there's a particular style of beer that you want us to try and get in, we will do our best.
It's really nice. We got some feedback from David Price in Newport in Wales from our last and first to drink along with us. And he got all three of the beers we did, and he particularly enjoyed the Goes from Polly's, the plant sugar. So then he went back and bought another 6 cans, which was fantastic to hear. So hopefully you're enjoying those, David. And I know you bought these ones as well. Hopefully they're going down well too. So if you heard the first of our drink-alongs on the last episode, you'll know that one of the great things about this feature is we don't mess around. We open a couple of drinks, drink them, tell you what we think, and then hopefully you tell us what you think of them. So we're going to move swiftly on to number two of our drink-alongs, and we're going up to Manchester to Beatnik's Republic, and we're cracking open their Black Light Breakfast Imperial Blueberry and Maple Syrup Stout.
It smells very mapley, smells really mapley. I'm expecting this to be quite sweet, sticky. Blueberry's a hard flavour to bring through, so it's either going to have loads of blueberry or be quite subtle. But I'm guessing the aim here is to sort of have that big, sticky blueberry maple pancake. That's my guess. I can smell an awful lot of maple on the nose. It's definitely sweet. I think we're going to be in, if you like them sweet, I suspect this might be what we're getting.
Right, so there's it certainly is sweet, but I've got to say I've had quite a few of these types of beers recently, and I found that a lot of them are sweeter than this and too sweet for me. I can cope with the sweetness on this one, although I do get at the end, for me, it's almost like a licorice flavour.
I get quite a lot of lingering maple on the end. I've sort of read the back of the can just while we're drinking, and the idea is we've paired huge amount of maple syrup and blueberries with rich dark malts to create a seriously decadent dessert stout inspired by our love of maple and blueberry pancakes. So that's what they're going for. So if you like those big American stacked pancakes drowning in maple syrup and loads of blueberries on there, so you get a bit of sweet and then you might get a more sort of earthy licorice, as Dave's saying, blueberry, I think you'll be in heaven.
So we like to keep it fresh and new on Daft About Craft, so here's something fresh and new.
Yes, it's a new little feature called Tried and Tested, which is where we just tell you about one beer we've had since we last talked to you that we really enjoyed and why. Nice and quick, no fuss, no muss. So in that spirit, the beer I've enjoyed the most since our last episode came from Polly's, and it was the Every Piece Matters, the 10% version, the double dry hot tipper. Reason being, it was just pure juice. It was so smooth, it was so fruity. You'd have absolutely no idea that was a 10% beer. It was brilliant. It was a little bit sticky as well, but it was never dank. It was just a lovely beer, no alcohol burn, went down an absolute treat, and I'm very much looking forward to now trying the birthday quad beer, which I've been sort of keeping hold of for a special occasion.
And for me, Dave? And for me, it was a 10% Imperial Stout from Pressure Drop called Slumber, an Imperial Affogato Stout, which was so well balanced, and I had it after I just had Vocations Imperial Affogato Stout, which were, for me, was just too sweet, but then followed it with the Pressure Drop. Beautiful and balanced, a really great example of that style of stout, spot on.
If you see either of those on the shelves, why not grab one?
Right, it's the time of the show now where we bring somebody on from a brewery and let them chat to you without us interfering. They just chat away and tell you all that's been going on with them. And we're absolutely thrilled to introduce Oliver Webb, the founder of Dig Brew, one of my local craft breweries here in the Midlands. And I can often be found sitting in their tap room. I really enjoy going there. It's got a great vibe. And they do some great beers, Dig Brew. And Ollie will tell you all about it now, and some exciting plans as well. And thanks very much for doing this. It's a really fascinating listen. Hope you all enjoy it too.
Hey, guys. So this is Ollie from Dig Brew, here to introduce ourselves to those who maybe haven't heard of us before, or maybe have, but only a little bit, or know us reasonably well and want to know some more things. I thought it's good to kind of give a bit of context so I could talk about how we sort of started a little bit, and who we are at the moment in these kind of strange and unprecedented times. And then I could talk about the beers that we're releasing soon, which will give a kind of a nice snapshot as to like what we're about. I guess as well, I should probably apologize for the Wolverhampton Birmingham hybrid accent that will be searing the insides of some listeners right now, I'm sure. I'll try and get this done as quickly and painlessly as possible. Anyway, Dig Brew. We sort of started life. Dig Brew, me as a brewer, started life, as most do, as an illegal kind of speakeasy bar in my university studio. Studied art, fine art. So we were luxuriously given a space in the university to use as our studio space. And mine during my second year, rather than being used properly for paintings and sculptures and other artistic endeavours, became a bar and a meeting place. And we had lectures there and we had parties and post-day drinks. And we started to brew a little bit of beer there too. The only objective was to make it cheaper than Sainsbury's at that stage. And it did not taste very good, but we succeeded in making it cheaply, and it turned me on to the kind of the potential that beer has, obviously as a good liquid, but also as a part of a community of people. You'd be amazed the kind of stuff people will happily drink and enjoy if they feel connected to where it has come from. So that kind of really got me interested in the scene, and you know, it was the time of Kernel and Beaver Town in London, and you know, that's kind of my in through that. And then fast forward a little bit, I graduated, I went to New York for a bit, discovered Other Half, which I'm sure lots of people will name drop in their kind of origin stories. But yeah, like that you know, they didn't turn me onto the idea of like craft beer as a scene, but certainly as like a something that you could spend your career kind of focusing on. That's where I really kind of got in my head that that's what I wanted to do. So then, yeah, came back from New York. I was only there like a month or so. I got involved with a pub that maybe some local people will have heard of called Mad O'Rourke's Pie Factory, which is like a really old, family-owned, independently run pub food place in Tipton in the Black Country. And I was doing a bit of commercial brewing in the Black Country as well. And they agreed to loan me the money to get Dig Brew started, which is, yeah, how we bought the tanks and things. And Dig Brew, it comes from the area that we were in. So it's an area in Birmingham called Digbeth. And we got the kit summer of 2017. So end of June, start of July, that'll be 4 years that we've been making beer here. And then to completely not mention all of the people who work here during quote unquote normal times, we are a foursome of myself, Andy, who's the head brewer. He studied geology at uni, and he got into beer there, and he runs his own cuckoo brewing project called White Bear as well with a friend called Joel. And then Mark, who we made a beer about, in fact Andy and Joel made a beer about called Mark Can't Be Killed by Conventional Weapons. There's little that we know about Mark's origin story, as we're afraid that he may have to kill us if we know too much. And then last but not least would be Bryony, who's joined us this financial year, COVID times, as we've had to transition away from our kind of taproom local keg trade model to a small pack only national international distribution thing over these weird COVID times. And she's certainly here to stay, so that's going to be a big part of what we do moving forwards. So yeah, I should probably talk about the beers we're making at the moment or releasing soon. Something that we found that's like really, really influenced us is like over COVID, like the kind of the way in which a lot of customers or maybe drinkers would kind of come into contact with Dig Brew would be kind of seeing it at a bar, which is completely kind of like uncontrollable and it's just a snapshot, or coming maybe monthly or every other month or something to the tap room where you have what is available at the time. But now that we've been doing like lots of home delivery and you know, having to keep everyone very up to date with what we're doing, because the only way to kind of sell beer now is like through a computer screen or a phone, we found there's like a whole bunch of people who are like really keeping up to date with what we're doing and kind of buying one of every release and buying a pack of beers every single time we release some. And it's a really nice way to think about people drinking what you're doing, because it allows you to think about things in a more kind of like time-based way. You can start somewhere and grow from that point. And it's you know, the year of series for Dig Brew is very much on, you know, it's very much on our map of what we're going to be doing. So for example, November, December, January, just gone, we went through a series of potions. So potions, this kind of taproom favourite, 4.2% Chinook Mosaic. And then through those like winter Christmas months, we released super potion, hyper potion, max potion, and full restore, which if you're the right age, you'll recognize is from the Pokemon games and trading cards. But yeah, basically super potion is a 5.2% version, and we threw a little bit of Sabro in there. Hyper potion was 6.5% IPA. And we bought Cryo Mosaic alongside the T90 hops from Potion in that. And then Max Potion was the dipper of the group, where we bought a Zacker in. And a Zacker's like another like Dig Brew hop favourite. And then Full Restore is 9.6% version. A Zacker, Chinook and Mosaic. Not quite a tipper, but yeah, it was great fun to like brew those beers and release them like one after another, and it was like a really nice thing to do around that time of year as well. And then we were, you know, it was cool to speak to a lot of customers about, oh, when's the next one coming out? What are you gonna do with the next one? Blah blah blah. And yeah, so this year we've kind of really said to ourselves, right, series are great fun, and it's a super interesting way of thinking about brewing beer. We think it's really interesting for our customers to interact with as well. They can kind of go, oh yeah, I really like that last one, or I hated that, but I want to see where it's going. Like, hopefully they take it in a direction that I'm into, sort of thing. And yeah, so like the 10th of March, we're canning a beer called Oh No, It's Moon Unit. So we have an Oh No, It's series, which is a double IPA led by Citra, but with a supporting hop. So Moon Unit's Cryo Simcoe, but we've done Oh No, It's Magic, Oh No, It's Crime Fighter, and Oh No, It's Laser as well. And all those names are ridiculous celebrity baby names, if you need to know the lore. So Moon Unit, yeah, is coming out on 10th of March. We've upped it from 8% to 9.6. Reason being, Full Restore was 9.6, and there was a few things with that recipe that we learned, and we were like, well, okay, we want to tweak things. We want to see what we can do with that. And we found our best like kind of route to improvement is through kind of very controlled experimentation. So we decided, right, here's an opportunity to stick with that ABV and make the changes that we think we're capable of making and see if we can pull it off. And yeah, we're really happy with it. Also 9.6 because we're releasing another double IPA at the same time, which is 8%, so we thought we'd keep the variety. And that beer, it's another rebrew called Waka Jawaka, which we brought out. It's a collab beer with a chef called Brad Carter, who's a Michelin star chef in Birmingham. His restaurant's called Carter's of Moseley. And we started a bit of a side project with him last year called Studio Z, that basically uses his mantra of only using British ingredients in his menu as a jumping off point. And he like all the way from seasonings, he uses ant venom over lemon juice because it's not easy to get good British lemons. That was where we started, and we make majority kind of hoppy IPAs, and most of the time it's going to be American or Australian or New Zealand hops. So we thought it would be a cool challenge to try and do that, but with British hops. And Daya, I think recently, I'm remembering a year ago here, but I think they'd recently released a beer using Harlequin, which is a small release British variety. So we did a bit of research, and we went to some farms, met some farmers, we got some hops in, and then yeah, we decided we wanted to do a New England style dipper, but only using British hops. So those are Harlequin, CF182, which I think is going to be called Opus if they plan to release it more fully, and then T45 Olicana and T45 Jester. The T45 is kind of Charles Ferrum's answer to BBC or Cryo, and it's kind of cold chain processed with a different grind setting when they're making the pellets, which allows them to isolate more of the kind of oil saturated parts of the flowers. Great for making IPAs. It's tasting fantastic in tank. Really, really recognizable. London Fog yeast, so it tastes like a dipper. But there's also something completely alien about it as well, not having any of those kind of big Citra, Mosaic, Simcoe, Galaxy, Motueka kind of like keystones to kind of like sit on and taste the other flavors from. Very stone, like lots of stone fruit, kind of mango-y. But if you sort of blended the whole mango, like the skin and the seed and the leaves and everything, it's got that kind of hop resin spiciness to it. But yeah, I mean, we really hope that beer kind of can get people excited about what maybe the next decade of British hop growing is going to be like, and the sort of beers that we're going to be drinking in 2031. And hopefully everyone kind of remembers that it was Dig Brew that went there first, and everyone can have their Wacka Jawacka first time I tried it story, maybe. And then I guess if people are interested in future plans, ideally, basically, we just want to make more beer. If we could have 8 releases a week, you know, I'd bite your hand off. We got our, you know, our barrel aged stouts are starting to catch up with us now, so we're brewing a lot of dark imperial things that I could talk about just as much as the dippers. I guess maybe if people want to know, I'd be super happy to come back and talk about the stouts another time. I don't want to drone on forever all in one go now. But yeah, I mean, to cut it off there, I mean, hit me up on any socials if people have any questions. I'm really bad at checking on the Twitter messages, but Instagram I'll get pretty quickly. Yeah, thank you for having me.
And now it's time for Hype or Tripe.
It's a part of the show where we grab a beer that's getting rave reviews everywhere and we see if it lives up to that top billing. What we got this time then, Dave?
This time we've gone for Pomona Island, who did feature on a previous episode when we did some blind tasting, but this time we're taking them in their own right with one of their own beers and judging it just on that. So we've gone for, as I sort of hinted at the start of the show, one for fans of Alan Partridge, Chevron Action Flash. I mean, the can art is brilliant because it captures Alan Partridge or Steve Coogan's jumper with the chevrons. If you fans of it will remember it, and if not, just have a Google. It's brilliant. You can actually buy all the clothing. I noticed that when I was Googling it.
I saw it as well.
Quite tempted.
But isn't it amazing how such a simple design can get over so much?
Yeah, more beers with chevrons, please. I think it looks so smart.
Yeah,
like
very much.
It jumps off the shelf. Mm. I mean, I didn't get this off the shelf. I got it in an order. But had I been in a bottle shop, I know I would have walked out with one of these because it just jumps off. Pomona's artwork's always very good, but just to go with that rather than this little graphic they have normally, I think it's brilliant. If the beer matches the can art, we're in for a treat.
Oof, well, I've just cracked mine open and that does burst out at you. From what I can work out, Dave, this is their fourth triple IPA. They've had Tripping at the Ego, Tripping at the Gates of Hell,
which I didn't have but got rave reviews.
Yeah. An Overwhelming Surplus of Diggity, which I think for some reason is still in one of the fridges here, which I do need to drink. And a Sonic Titan more recently. And then this one.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've had any of the previous tippers, and I've had plenty of Pomona, but for whatever reason, I've not had any of those ones. So it'll be a first for me having one from these guys. And I haven't had any Pomona for a little while as well. I went through a phase of drinking a lot and then I shied away a bit. I felt they were doing a lot of beers which were tasting quite similar. So it's quite nice to go back to them and see if anything's changed. It didn't necessarily need to. I was probably just drinking too many of them and they were all sort of blending into one.
It was in that first lockdown, wasn't it? We both bought quite a bit from Pomona and they were knocking out a lot of beers every week, often sort of, you know, half a dozen new beers every week. And they do cover the range from pales, sours, Russian Imperial Stouts, double IPAs, and this triple IPA. You've just taken a mouthful. I'm just letting mine sit in the glass for a minute. What do you think?
Well, we've got Cryo Citra, Simcoe, and then Sabro. Now, ooh. Oh, and Strata.
Wow, it looks very soft in the glass. Lovely sort of soft head on it, pillowy.
Mm, it's quite a light colour as well. We're not in the tippers where you're in that sort of orangey colour. This could easily be put in your glass and you were thinking you were drinking a pale or even a double. It's very smooth.
It is. I've just had a little go.
Quite sweet.
It is quite sweet.
Trying to sort of work out what I'm getting.
Quite sort of fruity as well.
In terms of specific hops or anything like that or specific fruit flavours. It's very fruity, but I don't know if I'm pulling out anything in particular.
No. I'll tell you what is interesting is that although we said that the Citra, Simcoe, Sabro, Strata, we often have this debate about what are the proportions and does one hop overtake all the others, but that seems really well balanced because I can't pick out a specific dominant hop there.
Maybe on the very first mouthful, I think the Sabro came in at the end more, but that's levelled off really quickly. There is that little bit of sticky, quite sort of bitterness running through now, which isn't unpleasant. It's nice because I don't need it to be completely sort of...
Well, that sort of offsets that
sweet all the way through.
That offsets that kind of sweet fruity hit at the start, doesn't it?
Mm.
It's interesting. Once you pour it into the glass, I'm not getting that much on the nose. When I opened the can, there was a big
either.
Hit, but once it's poured into the glass, there's not much there.
There's not really mango, is there? Or or sort of anything overripe. It's just fruity. It's just a tropical fruit.
It's fruity, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't
pick it, and nor perhaps do you need to.
It's just fruity, isn't it?
It's a very good tipper. I've got no complaints with that at all. It's interesting to see what you can do with a tipper as well. You know, we had on the last episode too, didn't we? You had Daya.
I've had tippers.
There seems to be a lot you can do within any style, but yeah. I mean, you remember all the way back to episode one, we had a tipper, and it was a Northern Monk one. And that was, by comparison to this, it was just sort of strong, boozy, and quite dank, wasn't it?
Mm.
It was that orangey colour, and it was really full on, whereas this, complete other end of the spectrum.
For anybody who hasn't tried it and wants to get hold of it, you can get it on Pomona's web shop, £7.95, which, having now tasted it, seems like very good value to me.
It's quite a bargain, actually, for how much tippers go for.
Mm.
I know that.
But if somebody said to you, that's £10, £11, you wouldn't balk at it too much, would you?
I struggle to say, oh, no, that's too much for that.
I see.
No, it's a really good bit, and it's really nice, as I said, to go back to Pomona and find that they're still knocking out quality beers.
Good beers. I can certainly feel that 10%. I don't know about you.
I can't yet, but that's not to say I won't. if we left the recording on for 20 more
maybe
minutes,
I've drunk it
I
faster.
Will do. But
I see that Pomona Island are actually opening a new tap room later this year, October the 30th, at the Ticket Hall in Escape to Freight Island in Manchester. If this beer is anything to judge by what they'll be selling, I think we're going to have to pay a visit there. Well, it's all going on this episode. It's another winner.
Yeah, it's very not unusual, but it's really good to see that we can be as honest as we've been on any other episode before, but have absolutely no qualms in recommending that.
That's all for this time. You can catch the next episode of Daft About Craft available to stream and download from March the 29th.
You have been listening to Daft About Craft, the craft beer podcast, brought to you in association with independent bottle shop Real Ale. You can buy online at realale.com and in-store at Twickenham, Notting Hill and Maida Vale. Follow them on Instagram at realale_LTD.